I'm Richard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 220 for the week starting 20 May 2018.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, real technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, Duncan is a hodler.
Oh my word, I've gone and done it. Also this week, GDPR unleashes a wave of email. Telkom earnings preview, they're coming out tomorrow. Netflix is briefly the world's most valuable company. Battlefield 5 is coming and it looks amazing. And the FBI wants you to reboot your router.
It's Sunday, our new time slot for this podcast, and that means it's time to talk everything technology.
Welcome to the show, everyone. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
You're sounding a lot better this week.
Coming to you in stereo today.
You've invested in a bit of audio gear on your side. We are still recording over the internet, but the quality of this podcast, at least from Richard's side, is now far superior to what it has been before.
Yeah, it's definitely worth stepping up a level.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's enjoy.
For sure. So before we get into all of this week's news, let's run through our quiz questions for this week. Do you want to do the first question, Richard?
For sure. Uber has bought which South African-founded technology company to bolster its Uber Eats offering, integrating with point-of-sale systems?
And which JSE-listed fund manager this week said it plans to launch a cryptocurrency exchange later this year?
Third question. The EU on Friday finally introduced its tough new privacy regulations, GDPR. What does GDPR stand for?
And Cell C's chief financial officer announced on a call with analysts this week that he is resigning after less than a year in the role. Who is he?
And the final question, which major South African retail group this week announced it would launch a mobile money offering?
We'll get to the quiz results, as always, at the end of the show, but lots and lots and lots of news to talk about this week. From GDPR to Netflix becoming the world's most valuable media company. Quite an achievement for a company that started out in mail order DVDs.
It's crazy.
It is crazy. But just a reminder to anyone listening live to the show or post the fact, please do send us a WhatsApp voice note on 071-999-1111. We'd love to get your feedback. You can ask Richard and I any questions you'd like to. And as I said that, an audio voice note came in literally this second. So shall we play that, Richard?
Let's do that.
This voice note is from, I hope I don't butcher this name. Renail Sivanandam. Sivanandan. Apologies, Renail, if I'm pronouncing your name horribly. But we've just received your voice note here, so I'm going to play it on air. I'm just going to hold it up to the mic, Richard, so you can hear it.
Cool.
Hey, guys. Renail here. Thanks for the great show, as always. My question is, with Nokia coming up with these Android One phones and Huawei making a market for themselves locally with good price-to-value prospects, how do you see the local phone market shaping up in the next few years? Thanks.
Well, that's a good question. There certainly has been some very interesting development, and I think HMD Global, which is now the brand licensee for Nokia, is bringing out some interesting devices. I was actually in an MTN store yesterday having a look at the new Nokia 7 Plus, which for the price, it's around six and a half thousand rand, is really, really good value for money. 64 gigabytes of storage, 6-inch full HD screen, pure Android experience. Very nice device. Of course, they've also announced the Nokia 8 Sirocco. They've got some nice phones in the market. I think that we may see later this year a new high-end one. This is just guesswork, but I think we may see a Nokia 9 or a Nokia 10 trying to take on that very high end of the market against the iPhone and the Galaxy S9, which I'd really like to see. Currently, their highest end phone is the Sirocco. But yeah, they've got some interesting phones in the market at very interesting price points, starting, of course, with that with the Nokia One, which is running the Android One OS, and announced, I think, last year at Google's developer conference. And it's $1,000, and it's a good phone for the price. So you know, Nokia is doing some good stuff, and Huawei, of course, is also doing some amazing stuff. The phone that really has my attention at the moment is the P20 Pro. The Huawei P20 Pro. If I was going to buy a phone now, and I don't need to because my existing device, an S8, is running absolutely fine. But if I was going to buy a phone tomorrow, I would have a very, very serious look at that P20 Pro, which has incredible camera tech built into it and takes very interesting advantage of the AI chip in the phone to do stuff with photography. Have you had a look at the P20?
I had a touch and a quick feel looking at it. It looks like a fantastic device. But you know, at the end of the day, when you have a high spec phone, good camera, the differentiator isn't really that much. Maybe there's a few touches that make it feel, you know, better in your hand, or you actually just like what the company's doing. The question is, what's the big differentiator with these phones these days? What makes you like one over the other, I guess?
Yeah.
I don't have an answer to that because everyone's got its charm. Each one's got its charm. I do like the P20, but would I own one? Would I ever invest in one? I don't think so.
No. Why not? Just a brand choice.
Maybe a little bit of a brand choice. I don't see the value in all of those features really.
Yeah.
You know, that's not my buying decision. It's more about how does it feel in my hand? Maybe a bit about kind of general adoption around me. What works best with the tools that I want to use?
Yeah. It's those cameras that really got my attention on the P20 Pro. The rear, I think it's a 20 megapixel and a 40 megapixel rear camera, and then a 24 megapixel selfie camera. It's pretty potent combination, and some of the reviews I've seen online, I haven't had a chance to play with the phone myself, but some of the reviews online suggest that this is the phone to get now if you're a mobile photographer.
Oh yeah, no. Look, from that point of view, if you're going after the best spec in the camera, then it's hard to not look at that Huawei P20 Pro. It certainly got everything you'd want in today's latest tech. But I feel like you can throw a lot of megapixels at me, but at the end of the day, I'm probably gonna keep that photograph digitally on a computer or on social media. You know, again, it's nice to have it, but it's not a big swaying factor for me.
Okay. Yeah. But you carry a DSLR separately as well, so.
Which, I mean, I don't use. Yes, I use it for bigger work, but I still use my entry level, iPhone 6S. You know, it's good enough.
Yeah.
And I really am talking from a spending money on these things point of view. It's a lot of money.
Just a last comment on that voice note. I'm actually most excited about what's happening in the mid-range of the smartphone market, not the high end. I think that's really where the exciting stuff is at the moment. I mean, you can go out there and you can buy a 15 or 20,000 rand phone, but you can actually get a phone that's almost the same in the mid-range. Sure, it hasn't necessarily got the very latest optical sensor in it. It hasn't got the latest Qualcomm 845 processor. But for 5,000, maybe even 10,000 rand less, you're getting a very competent fast phone that would have been considered high-end just 24 months ago, if not sooner.
And that's exactly what I'm talking about. That's the device that I've got. And yes, I always like to have the latest and greatest, but at some point, you just don't need it.
Yeah.
Especially with a phone that can do everything you need to do, especially if the camera's good enough.
Yeah.
And it can obviously connect to all the social networks you need.
And there's some fantastic phones in that space. And certainly not, you know, it's a small minority who can afford to buy an Apple iPhone 10 or a Samsung Galaxy S9 Plus. Let's face it. And, you know, most people are going to be looking at the low end to mid-range devices. And in that mid-range, there's some pretty exciting things. Even in the low end, there's some exciting stuff like the Nokia One, a 1,000 rand phone that's very competent. Runs pure Android. So
exactly.
Exciting times in that sort of lower end of the market. I do wonder if Apple's going to try and compete in the mid-range more aggressively this year. There's rumor that they're going to be introducing a new iPhone SE at their iPhone event, which I think usually happens around September. It'll be interesting to see what the price point on that is, because I think mid-range for Apple might mean 15,000 rand, but
in my opinion, mid-range Apple is two-year-old Apple, 24-month-old Apple.
You're right.
You know, so many people either buy a second-hand or they keep the devices or it's a hand-me-down, and it becomes by default just a mid-range device, and it can still run everything that you want it to do.
Yeah, for
sure. It's about being clever with your smart device rather than chasing the latest and greatest, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, buying a brand-new Apple iPhone every year or every second year it gets prohibitively expensive.
Unless you've got a lot of Bitcoin.
A lot of Bitcoin, yeah. So we've got another voice note here. This one is from Wepener van der Walt. I'm just going to play this on the microphone again.
Thanks for bringing up the show on a weekly basis. It's great to hear South African, relevant South African news about tech, and it's great to get in touch with it. And you guys always have interesting content. Even though Duncan isn't the biggest iOS fan, it's still okay. I just wanted to pitch a little idea this week. I've got two suggestions or picks that work really well for me. The first one is Overcast. It's a podcatcher app for iOS. It's a beautifully designed application. It's got a lot of great features like customized playlists. You can recommend podcasts to other people. You can shorten sentences where there's no sound. Or you can also enhance the voice of the person speaking. Overall, great podcast app. Unfortunately, just for iOS. Highly recommend it. And then the second one is a lightweight internet browser called Brave, which unfortunately gets rid of all, fortunately, depending how you look at it, gets rid of all the advertising for websites, and it is incredibly fast. It is by far the fastest web browser I have ever experienced, and it's amazing. It's simple, lightweight, and hyper-effective. It's built in Chromium. So highly recommend it. And, so thanks, guys. Keep up the good work. Look forward to hearing the next show. Have a lucky week. Bye.
Well, thanks, Vepna. Overcast. Have you used Overcast?
No, I haven't used either of those, and I just opened them up now, and I'm going to definitely download and try them out.
I know of Overcast. I use Pocket Casts, which is a cross-platform podcatcher, because I listen on both my iPad and my Windows desktop and my Android phone. But Overcast, I have heard good things about it. It is iOS only, as Vepna said. But maybe I'll have another look at it on my iPad. And then you mentioned the Brave browser, which is this privacy-oriented browser, which does, yes, remove advertising, which is not great for online publishers such as Tech Central. I mentioned in a previous show, we're considering doing something along the lines of what the Daily Maverick has done, which puts up a little box if you're running an ad blocker and just ask you to whitelist it. Advertising is our business model, and we can't bring you great content like this if you're blocking our ads. So please do whitelist Tech Central if you're using Brave or Ghostery or one of those ad blockers. But I've also heard good things about Brave, a very privacy-oriented web browser. I haven't used it personally, but Vepna, thanks for the recommendation. I'm going to go and have a look at it.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a time and a place for something like this. You know, it's I wouldn't use it as my daily browser because I do see need in being tracked on some things. It just makes my work life easier because I'm so plugged into all of these sites. But yeah, well worth checking out. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. But remember to whitelist Tech Central. And then there's a follow-up message here from Vipina as well. Let's just play this.
And I just also wanted to say thank you for creating the mechanism through which we could give feedback, verbally feedback like this on the show. It's really great. It's a great idea. Keep up the innovations. Appreciate it tremendously. Okay, cheers. Bye.
Oh, great. Thanks, Vipina. I really appreciate the positive feedback. And keep those voice notes coming. We really do appreciate it. Our number is 071-999-1111. Add it to your contacts list. We'd love to get your messages. And if they're voice notes, we might include them in our next show. But right now, let's start to talk about this week's news. And while it's not really news, I wanted to raise it anyway. I finally am a investor. I suppose that's the right term to use in Bitcoin. I bit the bullet, and I am now what they call a hodler. I'm owning Bitcoin, and I've started watching the price much more closely than I did before.
Is it part of your daily routine, your breakfast, the lunch, and dinner routine?
Yeah, in fact, I've installed a little plugin into my web browser which shows me the Bitcoin price in real time. even though my intention is to hold it for a couple of years, I've put in a reasonable amount of money, but not enough to cause me any financial distress if Bitcoin crashes through the floor and burns.
Which is the way you need to do it.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
To everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to put enough money in so that it would keep my interest in it. I think if you put a very small amount of money in, you'll just forget about it and you won't. My idea with investing in this is to follow the crypto market more closely. I may move some of that Bitcoin into other cryptos over time. I'm quite tempted by Ethereum as well. I'm also quite interested in Monero, since I discovered that the lead developer for Monero is South African, Ricardo Spagni,
cool.
Yeah, who I did a podcast with just a week ago, or earlier this week, in fact. Very interesting guy. Fluffy Pony is his handle on Twitter and elsewhere. Crypto, yeah.
Okay.
So I'm in.
So I'm interested. I've got $500 to put into this.
Yeah.
What? How do you do it? Did you go to that vending machine at your local spa?
No, I went to Luno, which is the biggest exchange for these things in South Africa. The exchange rate isn't ideal. There's always a bit of a 5% premium over the US dollar rate when you're buying in rand. But I looked at all the charts for Bitcoin, and I'm no expert on these things, but it does look like it's reaching its lows. For the year, it's bounced a bit, but there seems to be a lot more stability coming into it. But my main reason for investing is to learn about it, and I think it's the best way to learn is to invest in something, and then you really start to pay attention to it. And,
sure. But can I use Luno to just do? I just add my credit card details, my debit card details or my check card details.
No, you don't even have to do that. It's if you're not with FNB, are you?
No.
It's dead simple if you're with FNB, but it's as simple as an EFT. There's an instant EFT that happens with FNB. Maybe there were some other banks, but
you get instant EFT with all institutions. It's a third party feature.
Okay, then I'm not sure the details for other banks. I use FNB and I transferred the money through an EFT using a special code. And the money reflected in my Luno wallet immediately, and I was able to trade within seconds.
And were you sitting there act like a game, actively trading? Buy, sell, or was it
I just put in a bid at the market price at the exchange rate, which at the time was 99,000.
So once it's in your wallet, you then, at the right time, put that into the actual currency you want.
That's right. So you transfer South African rand into your wallet, and then you just simply give an instruction to Luno to buy whichever cryptocurrency you want to buy. They only support Bitcoin and Ethereum at the moment. I decided to go with Bitcoin, although several of my friends have told me that they're investing in Ethereum now because they believe it's got more of a upside potential.
You should spread your bets. Shouldn't you?
I should. I should.
70-30 or something.
Yeah, I figured I'd go with Bitcoin because it's the biggest crypto. And I figure that, you know, that all these cryptos do tend to move together. Sure, some of them over time will far outperform others. Others will far underperform others. But I don't think Bitcoin is going away. It's the big daddy of crypto money, and you've got to start somewhere, right?
No, I agree. Mm. I agree. I'm going to follow your lead, and I'm just going to get a little bit of Bitcoin currency, 100-200 rand, and just take from there. I mean, it's very small into comparison, I'm sure, to what some of the other guys are doing.
Yeah.
But
I mean, if you're buying that sort of volume, then you could certainly walk into my local spa and put a 200 rand banknote into the Bitcoin machine. And
but that's exactly what I want to do. I'm going to try that out. I want to go and trial it. I haven't done it yet. I did promise last week I would, but I just haven't had a chance.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going to try not to to talk too much. Crypto jargon on the show going forward as I learn more and more about these things.
But, no, please do. We're all learning here. I mean, if you just take the hard work out of it, just tell us all the things we need to know, and then we can all replicate your investment. Your investment styles.
I believe that once you get, I understand that Luno is a great way to get into it when you're getting started out. But once you really start to use the stuff and international exchanges and all that sort of thing, you'd probably leave Luno behind. But for now, I think it's a good way just to get that first exposure to crypto money. But I'm certainly not going to be betting the house on this under any circumstances, like some people have done and lost out. I mean, there are examples of people who mortgaged their houses when Bitcoin was nearly $20,000. And now it's a third of that. And they're crying. So if you do this stuff, do not risk everything on it.
I've got two last bits on Bitcoin that I want to share with you. Firstly, sure. Did read a story the other day about investment, someone in South Africa who disappeared with a lot of money. There's a lot of scams going around about Bitcoin investment right now.
Yeah.
I wouldn't trust third parties with this. I would certainly try it myself or not at all. That's my personal opinion. And then secondly, there was a news story that surfaced as well where some guy many years ago when Bitcoin first came out spent 10,000 Bitcoin to do a little thing and buy Domino Pizza.
I remember that.
10,000 Bitcoin. Which is worth like 180 million or something orb like that right now.
Yeah, and there was that other guy, and I think they mocked it a bit in an episode, a recent episode of Silicon Valley. There was the guy who lost a USB stick with it was thrown out, I think, in his jacket. I forget the story, but it had a lot of Bitcoin on, hundreds of millions of dollars worth, lying in a rubbish dump somewhere. He's been unable to find it.
Shame. Now, look, I had an old piece of thumb on it. Nothing major. I'm sure it was half a Bitcoin or something. Yeah. But really not much.
Yeah.
Lost forever.
Before we get into this week's news proper, we have another WhatsApp message here. This one is from John A. Let's hear what John has to say.
Hey guys, it's John here, first time listener. Very interested in carrying on listening to your show. My question is going to be gamer-centered, and it goes like this. What do you guys think that Microsoft needs to do to get back into relevance in South Africa with their Xbox brand? Because, you know, the PlayStation is everywhere. You go to the movies, it's there. You go to every shop, it's there. But Xbox is kind of nowhere. And I saw an Xbox One X for the first time at Gateway Incredible Connection, and there were two lonely little boxes there. So it really is kind of being hung out to dry. So what do you think they need to do to get back into the limelight, or is it game over for the Xbox One X brand and they need to wait for the Xbox 2 or the Xbox whatever it's going to be? Thanks, guys. Cheers.
Well, thanks, John. I mean, my thoughts on that, maybe, Rachat, you want to chime in with a few thoughts as well. But, Microsoft in South Africa, unfortunately, is very much a business sales-focused organization. They sell into big corporates, and they have never really paid a big attention to the consumer market here, which is really unfortunate because the Xbox One X in particular, which they said they were going to launch before Christmas last year, and I don't believe it actually happened, it's a great product, and I think gamers would snap it up. But Sony, I think it's through Steakinical. I'm not sure if their agent has changed, but they've done a really good job of selling the Xbox, the PlayStation in South Africa and marketing it properly and getting those units out there. You walk into any electronics retail store, you pick up a PlayStation, no problem. And they've done a fantastic job with it. And Microsoft, let's put facts on the table, has done a terrible job of marketing the Xbox in South Africa, and that's true of the Xbox One X. They had a window to get it into the market before Christmas last year. It really wasn't here. Maybe they had some issues with ICASA and getting approvals and all that sort of thing. But since then, it's been another 5 months, and you don't really see this Xbox One X being marketed much in the country at all. So, John, I think you're absolutely right. Microsoft has been doing a terrible job of Xbox, and they need to step up the game if they want to compete against Sony in this market.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you've kind of summed everything up there. But the thing is, you don't know if it's Microsoft International is not paying attention to this market, or if we don't have the right people here, you know, pushing for Xbox locally. There was a time where Xbox was everything. Yeah, I mean, I'm still a massive Xbox fan. I don't know if you recall last year when we had this exact conversation. I tried to get hold of Microsoft locally to do the interview with the guys on the new Xbox. They didn't respond for a while. They got back to me. They said nothing's launched yet. The rumors was that it was going to come. It wasn't going to come. There's obviously were some delays. It doesn't really matter, right? The fact that it's available internationally and we are still, you know, being pushed the old one, you know, there's not even massive price drops on the existing model. So we are losing out on both ends. And unfortunately, those guys, like myself, moving to PC now. So no more revenue to Xbox or Microsoft Live Services from our side, unfortunately. And it's unfortunately their own fault. I would have invested my money in the console if it was around in time.
Exactly. I was actually giving serious. I'm not even a big console gamer, but I was giving serious thought to buying an Xbox One X before Christmas last year. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to now. I've subsequently invested in upgrading my PC. I want to stick with PC gaming.
Yeah. It's sad that it's happening like that because Xbox, in my opinion, is a superior platform. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, you've always been an Xbox fan.
the fact that you can, you know, with the HoloLens stuff coming, you know, the question from the listener earlier was, what could they do apart from all the cool things, you know, marketing wise? Microsoft obviously has upper hand with that kind of technology, I think. It's a better gaming experience.
One thing I have done is bought an Xbox controller for my PC. That works so well. You can play all games, Windows PC games now, with an Xbox controller.
Interesting. And, I got so used to the mouse now, again, after so many years of not using it. Yeah. I don't know if I can go back to a controller for PC-based games, obviously, if I play on a console.
I use it for racing games like Need for Speed. For that, brilliant. Cool. It's brilliant for that. I'd rather use the Xbox controller than the keyboard and mouse for racing games. But for 3D shooters, I prefer mouse and keyboard.
Yeah. But I must actually try. I'll get hold of one and just play with it for a while.
Yeah, for sure. Well, John, thanks for the interesting questions, and keep them coming. 071-999-1111. But we really do need to talk about the news now. So
I haven't even started the show yet.
Yeah, we're good half an hour in already. We haven't got to the news. I think most of that's my fault because I've been talking about Bitcoin. But let's talk about GDPR. Have you been overwhelmed with spam this week from just about every service you've ever signed up with in the last 20 years, updating their privacy policies and asking for permissions and all sorts of things?
It's been a nice reminder of all those services that I signed up for that I didn't know I had.
I haven't
read a single mail.
Oh, you haven't? No. What I've been doing, though, is every time one of these messages comes in, I just scroll it to the bottom, and there's always an unsubscribe button. And since these guys are claiming that they adhere now to GDPR, it's unlikely that they're going to just use this as confirmation to send me further spam. So maybe they will.
Your one chance to get off the list.
Get off the list. So every time one of these messages comes in, I just hit the unsubscribe button, unsubscribe. I must have done it 50 times in the last few days. So I'm hoping my inbox is going to be less full of spam going forward.
Yeah, no, that's a good tip. I'll do the same. Definitely.
But GDPR went into effect on Friday in Europe, but it affects companies worldwide. I think we've spoken about it quite a bit in the past. My view is that maybe some of these regulations are necessary, but by the same token, I think this is a bit of a money-making scam by the EU to fine companies and raise revenues for the EU. It's good in some respects. It may be somewhat overreaching, but it's there, and we're getting our own version of it quite soon. It's written already. The legislation is written. I think its introduction is imminent, and that's, of course, POPIA, or the Protection of Personal Information Act, which I don't think goes quite as far as some of the requirements of GDPR, but GDPR taking effect on Friday, and a lot of lawyers have been getting very richer because of this.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate side of it, but let's be honest, you know, no company has handled these things the way that they probably should have in the interest of the customer or at the end user, and kind of that's why we've got to this point, and people were able to push these laws through, or these regulations through. We're going to have to see how it works. But I'd rather have something than an unregulated, completely unregulated market if our data can get out there.
Yeah.
Which it has done. How many breaches have we had?
Yeah, and there was another one just last week reported, I think, by iAfrican, involving a traffic fine on one of these online traffic fine services. I forget the number.
Fine or something.
No, okay. It was something else, but it was a large number of records leaked. I forget the exact number, but it was many millions. GDPR. What I also found funny about the introduction of GDPR is that a number of US newspaper websites have started blocking users in the EU from accessing their website, saying it's simply too expensive to conform to the requirements. So as Bloomberg reported, they're effectively cutting off a market of 500 million people because of GDPR, and saying, well, tough luck, guys. The LA Times was one of the publications that did this. And I went into my VPN software and connected to a server in France, and then connected to the LA Times to see what this was all about. And indeed, it was there. You may not see this website because of GDPR, which is all a bit silly, of course, because if someone in France wanted to read the LA Times, all they need to do is fire up a VPN and connect to a server in the US.
Yeah, it seems that the laws don't really match up with the technology required to just manage this properly.
Yeah,
I think we all need to grow into what this whole big digital internet thing really still is. I mean, we're only, 25 years into it? No.
Well, since the web.
like in full time mainstream.
Yeah, since about 93, 94 in South Africa. Well, before it started really taking off, I think the guys were tinkering with it at Rhodes University in the very early 90s, if not the late 80s.
Mm.
But you're right, it's all about the internet maturing and growing up, and the regulators are getting involved now, for better or for worse. So Telkom's publishing its annual results tomorrow, which is always an interesting event. They're doing it at their subsidiary BCX's offices in Centurion tomorrow, and I'll be going along to listen to what the executives have to say and to interview the CEO, Sipho Maseko. Always look forward to the Telkom presentations because they're so dense and packed with information about their network and their numbers and all that sort of thing. Tomorrow should be interesting. We already have some insight. They've warned of a decline in earnings because of higher taxes and labor costs. We'll dig into the numbers tomorrow and look at what those fixed line numbers are looking at like in particular. I suspect we'll see a continued decline in number of fixed lines in service, particularly copper fixed lines. We should see a continued rise in fiber connections. Key numbers to look at, I think, will be the attach rate or the number of people who subscribe to the service where their home has been passed with fiber. Of course, the key mobile side of things, Telkom Mobile, will have to get an update on how well that has performed. The Freemi plans in particular, I think this will be the first full year or close to, it will be the first full year of Telkom numbers with the Freemi mobile broadband plans attached for the first time. So it'd be interesting to see what Telkom's numbers look like tomorrow, but at the headline level, they're in decline. Tough business to be in, I think. I was particularly interested, by the way, Rechat, there was a story this week that Openreach, which is the BT Groups or British Telecoms, they used to be called British Telecom, now just BT Group. Openreach was the basically their fixed line infrastructure that was hived off into a separate business. Pretty much what Telkom did a couple of years ago with OpenServe, creating a separate wholesale infrastructure division. So reports emerging this week that BT is considering offers that have been made from various private equity players to buy Openreach and to sell it off. So in other words, to sell the business that they were, that they started out being, which was a fixed line provider of telecommunications, selling that infrastructure. Really, really interesting. I did wonder reading that whether we may see a situation in the coming years where Telkom might decide that OpenServe doesn't necessarily belong in the group and they may entertain offers. I think it's more tricky here because the government still owns a big chunk of Telkom in the UK. British Telecom is fully privatized. But it was interesting nonetheless. And in my session with Sipho Maseko tomorrow, I'll ask that question. Is OpenServe core to your business? And could you sell it at some point in the future?
Interesting point, interesting question, yeah.
But keep an eye on Tech Central. We'll be covering the full Telkom results as they happen tomorrow, starting at just after 7 when the results are published on the JSE Stock Exchange news service. I think we need to take a quick break. We'll be back right after this.
Hello? I know you're there. Look, I can see the lights of the TV. Please, I just want to watch the finale. Come on, guys, I'll give you a foot massage or anything.
Time to get your own fiber? Speak to Vox. Because for a limited time period, you can save up to 3,000 Rand in installation costs. And we'll send a technician to help you get set up.
Hello?
Go to vox.co.za. Get fiber to your home. Get free installation and activation. Open the door to endless entertainment.
T's and C's apply.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Well, welcome back to the show. How's it, Rehat?
How's it, Duncan?
So a story you picked up, Netflix is now, was briefly this week, the world's most valuable media company. Overtook Disney.
Isn't that interesting, right? I'm just calling. No, I just lost my place where the story was. Let me just open
Well, it's unbelievable that this company that started out to order DVDs has overtaken Disney to become the world's most valuable media company. Its share price has been on an absolute tear in the last few years.
And if you look at the amount of valuable assets and rights and patents that Disney has, you know, copyrights at least, you know, that certainly seems to be the entity that should be making a lot more money.
Well, they are much bigger in terms of their revenue, and Comcast and all these big American media players are actually still much bigger than Netflix in terms of revenue. And I'm sure some of them are more profitable. Certainly some of them are more profitable as well. In fact, I don't think Netflix is making a profit. In terms of market cap, they've overtaken all of them, which says that investors are expecting that they're going to far outgrow all of their competition in the coming years.
Yeah. I mean, they certainly cemented their technology and their position being the benchmark of streaming services. I think every media industry around the world is struggling with the same issues that the likes of MultiChoice is having, competing with a streaming service as powerful as Netflix. It is the future without a doubt, and the guys that aren't going to keep up and invent their own competitive technology is going to fall behind or fall away completely. Obviously, when it comes to looking at the numbers compared to Disney, it's not just based on that. It's based on so many other business aspects. You know, Disney also has a lot of other investments that Netflix doesn't have. It's the future without a doubt. I mean, companies like Comcast and Disney are getting competitive and pushed down the ranks just because of a company with some servers around the world and some clever algorithms to push that media to various people.
And I mean, these companies, these media companies are massive. Comcast is an absolutely massive company. I mean, they're one of America's biggest ISPs. They basically own the cable TV business in America. And here comes this little upstart internet streaming company called Netflix. And it's like, sorry, guys, we're bigger now. Out the way. We're coming through.
And I mean, if you look at Netflix track record, who are the other big players that they managed to, you know, make redundant completely? I mean, Blockbuster, obviously US-based, but video stores in general, you know, after Blockbuster failed, it was a big eye-opener to everybody around the world renting out videos.
Yeah.
Whereas our local rental guys, you don't see them around. There's one or two shops, but they're not as big as what they used to be.
I see hardly any, driving around Joburg, I see hardly any DVD rental stores anymore.
I've seen one. There's one up the road here from where I am.
Yeah.
Very small, and it has a few people. And I can understand. You know, you have like a library of DVDs you can rent out, which is great. But it's a very small market.
It's a market, and it's shrinking fast. Yeah. I think all those guys will be gone soon. Once fiber has proliferated.
I mean, I don't even have a DVD player in my house. I mean, I don't, except for one machine that's connected to TV. None of my devices can play optical discs.
Yeah, I've got a DVD player in my lounge, but I can't remember the last time I used it. It's been years.
Look at all the space we managed to reclaim in our living rooms because we didn't have to put out the DVDs on display.
Yeah. Well, in my living room, I've still got these huge wall-mounted CD racks. I don't know what I'm going to do with them. I mean, they're full of CDs, and I never even touch them anymore. I just stream all my music on the internet. So it's like a piece of furniture on the wall, but it's got no practical use anymore. Maybe I need to strip them out and figure out something else to do with them.
Well, just store them somewhere. I mean, you're gonna appreciate them in a few years. Well, maybe not, but no, just to have them, I think they're going to become, you know, collector's pieces in their own right. Not that they might be worth millions, but...
No. I won't sell them. I won't get rid of my CDs. I might do that. I might put them into storage. But, you know, when I'm sitting in my retirement home in my 70s, I'd like to, look at this. remember this band from the last century?
Walking around the retirement house with a retirement home with your Walkman, Discman player attached to your hip and your big Nokia in the other hip.
No, attached to the Zimmer frame.
I can totally see that.
But I don't know what, I don't know what to do with these furniture. Any ideas from our listeners, drop us a WhatsApp on 071-999-1111. What should I do with my CD racks?
Because look, if you find some really nice wall-mounted frames, you can actually display them very nicely.
Yeah.
All those liners could look very nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I have no idea what to do with them, but we'll figure it out eventually. They can stay where they are for now. What's that, Rechon?
I said listening is not going to be one of those things.
No. No. What else do we need to talk about this week?
Battlefield 5.
Battlefield, yeah. The trailer was absolutely mind-blowing, wasn't it?
Oh, that is going to be a really good game. As a fan of the franchise from day one, I mean, Battlefield 1942 was mind-blowing for me. I remember I worn out that disc playing it so much. The edges frayed by the time I was done with it. It was a great game. And the franchise, I think, has just continued to... I mean, obviously, I'm a fan, so I might be a little bit biased, but I think the franchise has spoken for itself. Some good games, some bad games. But Battlefield 5 is one of those that they have to do something big with it. If you look at the graphics and the battle sequences or the way that you combat, I think gamers are in for a treat.
Yeah, so that go have a look on YouTube at this video. If you've got a 4K monitor, watch it in 4K because it is unbelievable. I think this is going to take the next generation of graphics cards to be able to play, though. The level of detail, especially in 4K, is just staggering. It's the first preview trailer for Battlefield 5. It's not going to be coming out for a while, is it?
Till about October. If you get the if you pre-order online, the one is $9.49, and the other one is, I think, $1,349 for the deluxe edition.
Not cheap.
I almost pre-ordered last night, but then I realized I have to buy this beautiful audio interface device today. But I'm definitely going to be pre-ordering the deluxe edition closer to the time.
What's the point of pre-ordering?
Well, just to get access to the open beta as soon as it launches.
Oh, I see. They'll release it before.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
So the game will launch. You'll also if you get the Battlefield Deluxe Edition, I believe you'll get like a week early access to the full game once it launches. But in terms of getting access to the open beta, that you need to pre-order to do that.
All right.
But I don't know when the open beta is launching, so they haven't announced that yet.
Yeah. I haven't played too much of Battlefield. I spent quite a bit of time on Battlefield 4, which was very good. I played Battlefield 1 and I kept dying, so I gave up on that.
But I'm busy playing that now, and it's a stunning game. It's absolutely
the graphics
beautiful.
Are unbelievable. This game always pushes the limits on graphics.
So I can only imagine what. And I'm pretty new to Battlefield 1, so I'm still on the honeymoon period of appreciating all the beautiful effects and the you know just the maps that you play in. I'm really looking forward to Battlefield 5.
So a couple of interesting stories that you added to the show notes here, which I'm keen to find out some more about. The FBI has recommended that people reboot their routers, something to do with some malware?
Yeah, so this is a pretty big one. There's a couple of router brands that were compromised in this malware attack. And according to this report by Cisco, they did an investigation into this. The malware is designed to steal website credentials that goes through the router. So anything from your office or your home network that goes through this, any of these routers could be affected by this malware, which is a pretty big thing. And the reason why this story caught my attention was one of the routers I actually had a few of in my days as a DSL user, the Netgear DGN220. You used to get it bundled with a lot of devices. And I actually still think you can buy these today. And the FBI, Cisco basically recommends that you just reboot your router to flash the malware. There would obviously be a firmware update. Just check that you are updated with firmware on your router. But there is a list, and I think we can probably share this in the show notes, but there is a list of routers worth looking out for if you have any of these, ranging from Linksys, Mikrotik, QNAP, and TP-Link.
Okay, yeah, we'll definitely put that in the show notes. I was checking if my router's on there as well. So if you reboot the router, it's just going to flush out the malware, but if you don't patch it, it could come straight back.
Yeah, exactly. So you want to make sure that you are up to date with the firmware reboot and make sure you're up to date with your firmware.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then the other little interesting story that you picked up, Rafat, was about cricket. Cricketers being banned from using smartwatches. What's that about?
Yes, so the International Cricket Board has banned the use of smartwatches, and I kind of think this is a pretty important step for sports in general, especially in sports, a gentleman's game like cricket, where you know you can't rely on or you can't use input outside of the game. This was used in a match recently. Two players had smartwatches on their wrists.
Yeah.
And it kind of brought to light the fact that there wasn't, you know, there was no information around whether it was used for communication or not. In a game like cricket, obviously that's against the rules. So yeah, it was well worth noting it could affect other sports potentially where communication, you know, among players is, in a game like this could give unfair advantage. And cricket, we know, have been, you know, fraught with, match fixing scandals for many, many years.
And ball tampering and all sorts of things.
Ball tampering and everything.
Do they still call it the gentleman's sport?
You can argue that. That's a very good point, Duncan. But I mean, I think sports in general and technology, I mean, there's so many ways tech can have an impact, not just doping as in Lance Armstrong case. Yeah. Although I'm sure a lot of tech was involved with that as well. But yeah, so you probably don't need to check your messages while playing a sports game, so it's probably probably not worth wearing it. I mean, it doesn't make sense unless you want to use it for something, maybe not according to the game's guidelines.
How are the players going to check the Bitcoin pricing? So that's the International Cricket Council, right, doing this ban.
Yes, that's
okay. Right, that's our news this week. Let's move on to our regular features. Our winner this week is Knife Capital, Cape Town-based venture capital firm. Which this week announced that they had exited their investment in Auditalk, South African-founded tech company that specializes in point-of-sale integration at fast food and restaurants, etc. They relocated to the U.S. a couple of years ago, but South African-founded business and one of the original investments of HBD, Happy Dragons Venture Capital, Mark Shuttleworth's venture capital firm that was transferred across into Knife Capital some years ago. Very successful exit. And these guys are starting to develop a knack for this, it seems. This is not the first major exit to an international company. So Uber buying Auditalk for their Uber Eats platform to integrate their ordering systems with the point-of-sale systems in restaurants. But they've exited a number of interesting businesses, including, remember, Akubu, which was sold to Garmin. Yeah. That was a nice capital investment. They were also invested in, I've forgotten the name now, there was a Visa bought out one of their businesses, also based in Cape Town, very successful financial services business. I think that deal was in total worth about $110 million. Hannes van Rensburg. I forgot the name of the company. It was Hannes van Rensburg founded it. Very, very successful business. Sold out to Visa. And they sold another business to General Electric. It's funny to think that these guys are very successful venture capitalists. Start to pay attention to who they're investing in, because they've had some spectacular exits, this one just being the latest of them. So Kiet van Zyl and the team at Knife Capital, they're our winners this week. And our loser this week is eMedia Holdings, which whose only investment is in eMedia Investments, which owns ETV, ENCA, OpenView HD. They reported a 1.6 billion rand loss this week. Warning that the free-to-air TV industry in South Africa is under enormous pressure. A lot of those losses were related to recognition of goodwill, presume related to acquisitions. That number was probably inflated because of that goodwill. So I don't expect to see such a big loss in the next set of results. However, not great numbers, declining, under severe pressure from DSTV, from the SABC, which is lifting its game under new management. It's a tough time to be in free-to-air media, and OpenView HD continuing to lose money, although they say they're going to continue to invest heavily in that platform because they do see big potential with it if they can get it up to 6% of the South African viewer base from, I think it was 3% now. But yeah, free-to-air television, perhaps not surprising, is a difficult business. So eMedia Holdings is our loser this week, but it could equally apply to the whole group. What's your pick this week, Richard?
So I've been on a bit of a router binge lately, Duncan.
You have?
As you know, I'm playing with big bandwidth, and with big bandwidth comes big responsibilities, right? So I've been the last router I checked out was a gaming router from Netgear, and now this one, because I've still got that 1 gigabit beautiful fiber connection, you know, I can't just connect my normal Huawei router that comes with a fiber connection. It just is not able to maintain those speeds over a Wi-Fi network. So I'm having a look at this. This is my long-term loan unit, review unit. It's called the Netgear Orbi, and it's a mesh network system. There's two units, two of these little beautiful, it almost looks like a, what do you want to, looks like home assistance.
It does. It looks a bit like the spaceship from Arrival.
Yeah, it's a beautiful. I mean, this thing can sit anywhere, and it just looks gorgeous. There's a blue light on top. That's a status. So if it's blue, the network is working. If it's amber or orange, the network's there's something wrong with it. But what sets this apart from virtually every other router in the market, apart from its price, which depending on where you buy it from is between 8,000 and 9,000 rand for the kit.
Ouch.
is its Wi-Fi performance that it's the performance that it puts out. So if you have fiber coming into your house, this is the kind of router that's going to give you the best performance everywhere in your house. It's a mesh network, a mesh router, which means that it's got a base station that connects to this, the router that connects to your fiber connection or to any other internet connection. And that uses, there's two channels on this that is used for people to connect to the internet, but there's a third channel running on the 5 gigahertz frequency that is only used as a backhaul between the two devices. So none of the Wi-Fi that you use to connect to your to connect to the internet is actually used for base communication between the two. And that is what makes this thing so powerful. You can obviously plug it into your wired internet, a wired network connection. But so far, in terms of my speed tests, I've been able to get, like I've shown you earlier, I've been able to get just over 500 megs down and 104 megs up from my smartphone. Well, on this network.
What smartphone is that?
This is an iPhone S, iPhone 6S.
Okay.
Standing outside. So I was about 5 meters away, 3 to 5 meters away outside, doing that speed test.
So it was traveling through what, a door or a wall?
Through a wall. That's, but I mean, I wasn't standing that far. I was just standing where I would normally stand and just take a break, you know, looking back at the cast type of thing. So, I mean, I was very impressed. I've only had it for a few days. But so far, you know, if you take price out of the equation, this really is designed for high-end home installations where you have a lot of smart devices connected wirelessly to your fiber connection, and you need a lot of throughput on each of those.
Like my house.
This one certainly can deliver it. I think when I'm done with this one, I'm going to come drop it off, and I think you need to test it. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised.
All right. That sounds fantastic. I'm still more envious of your fiber speed, though, than more than anything else.
Not long, Duncan, and I'll fall back to mere mortal status.
Enjoy it while it lasts. My pick this week is actually a TV series, which I thoroughly enjoyed. It's on Netflix. It's been there for a while, and I've been meaning to watch it for a while, and I'm glad I finally have, because it's actually really good. It's called Manhunt Unabomber. It's the it's made by Discovery, the same guys at Discovery Channel.
And I was just going to say, not the medical aid guys.
No. And it's about the hunt for the Unabomber. I saw the headlines at the time when this happened in the 1990s when the FBI caught this guy, and I didn't know a huge amount about the story. So it's really fascinating to look at. It's really, really well acted and done. For anyone who doesn't know, the Unabomber was a guy called Ted Kaczynski, who's now serving a life term in prison. In fact, 8 consecutive life terms in prison. He was a mathematician. He was an academic on a very promising career. And suddenly he decided he was going to go and live by himself in the woods somewhere or other, in the east of the U.S., Montana or somewhere like that. And he became a recluse and just became a bit of a survivalist. And he started sending letter bombs to people. He became, I think he must have flipped his lid and had a mental issue. I don't know what the story is. He pleaded that he was not insane, in court, but,
as all insane people do,
I suppose. I suppose if you're insane, you don't know you're insane.
No.
But he killed 3 people and injured, 24 more. Through these letter bombs that he sent through the U.S. Postal Service, and he published various documents, including a manifesto raging against modernity and technology. And in fact, his targets of his letter bombs were people involved in the technology industry. he was eventually caught. I won't give away too much detail because it's a big part of the Netflix series. But he was eventually caught by the FBI, and he's now serving 8 consecutive life terms in prison. But it's a great show, really, really well acted.
Wow.
And I highly recommend it if you have Netflix. It's called Manhunt Unabomber. It's been out for a while, but I've just got to it now.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. That is interesting. I watched something similar, just as an add-on to yours, recently. It was also a fantastic show called Evil Genius, a series of about 4 or 5 episodes.
Yeah.
About a bank heist, but just a very interesting story, pretty gripping stuff.
Based on true story?
True story, yeah.
Okay.
And it's very interesting.
Evil Genius. I'll have to check that out.
The Netflix original series also, so you know it's
good. Oh, no. Yeah. Well, some of them aren't that great, but generally they're quite good, yeah.
Yeah.
Generally they're quite good. And I think that's our show, Rechot, unless I'm missing something. No, I think we've got everything except for our quiz.
Quiz results.
Quiz results. Let me do the first question. Uber has bought which South African-founded technology company to bolster its Uber Eats offerings into – sorry, very clumsy question – to bolster its Uber Eats offerings integration with point-of-sale systems, and that is OrderTalk.
Second question, which JSE-listed fund manager this week said it plans to launch a cryptocurrency exchange later this year? And the answer is Signia.
And the EU on Friday finally introduced its tough new data privacy regulations, the GDPR. What does GDPR stand for? And that is General Data Protection Regulation.
The fourth question, Celsius' chief financial officer announced on a call with analysts this week that he is resigning after less than a year in the role. Who is he? The answer, Tyrone Sundarji.
And the last question in this week's quiz, which major South African retail group this week announced it would launch a mobile money offering? And that is ShopRite. Very interesting move, that. Biggest retailer in the country. I think they've got a good chance of shaking up the market with that offering.
Well, if the herb plant that you get with 100% purchase is anything to go by, yes, this is going to be fantastic.
No, you're growing your own herb garden, are you there?
No, I'm not, but it's a great idea.
It's a great idea.
Brilliant idea.
It's much better than giving away those little plastic trinkets of stuff that they were doing.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's our show. As always, if you've got any feedback, WhatsApp us 071-999-1111. If you include a voice note, we can include it in our next show. If you want to go old school, our email address is info@techcentral.co.za. From Rechot and myself, until next week, cheers.
Ciao, ciao.